coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
You kids know what you're doing.
To you with the kids and your podcasting, you. I never know.
We had a tape recorder when I was a kid.
I had to bring it on a cot with my overhead projector. I don't know why. I'm doing like Jerry Lewis as if he was from the Northeast, like Maine Jerry Lewis is what I'm doing. By the way, we're recording, so.
All right.
This is Hey Kids Comics issue 299. I'm Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston. Are you out there?
Good evening, everybody.
I don't know what's happening right now.
I'm not entirely sure either. That may or may not be some inkling of a potential new character, but.
What? Yeah, workshopping. We need to workshop it.
Yeah. It's unlikely at this stage.
That being said, though, it also goes to code, because we're in the fifth issue of a story arc, and this is what always happens. We always in the third one we think we're done. By the fourth one we're scrambling to get a fourth one out, and by the fifth one we've just given up. So we're definitely in the given up phase here.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to do this one. I like it. I think this has been a good story arc so far.
Well, this really has, and I mean, granted, you've carried most, if not all of it, but that's exactly what I had in mind. I really felt like this was going to be the arc that was your show.
Oh, but not you've definitely brought a lot to the table. I've just done a lot more research, and I still think that first issue with the Alan Scott was probably in the last couple of show, probably the one that really blew my mind more than anything you've done. Just seeing it all align in
yes,
I knew the disparate, but I hadn't put them together yet to make a whole, you know, the puzzle wasn't put together until then, and now that it is, my mind was blown. But that's not what we are talking about tonight.
That's right. We're not here to talk about the journey, because we've made most of it.
That's right.
And we've made the most of it.
And we are heading out of the blackest night and into the brightest day. Finally, it took us 4 hours to get here, but we are here, and this is a celebration that will last throughout the year. Considering there's only 1 week left, so make it count, people.
Yeah,
but,
so we're gonna celebrate and party.
We're gonna have a good time.
That's right.
I know. So tonight we venture into the brightest day, and I could not be happier to end this on a real positive note. We do so many of these, and the last issues are just, we're dragging and digging into like whatever we're doing, because we've just had so much of it. But we're ending on a hopeful note. So in theory,
it doesn't hurt that we kind of, you know, the last issue was the down note in it, you know, by its very nature. So
yeah,
it worked out well to sort of go in from that to a much livelier tone.
I agree. So this is the, if last issue we covered the dark spots, the blemishes, this one we're covering the bright spots, the redemption.
That was like the avocado, the Kelly greens, the darker greens of your various Green Lanterns.
This is the green that appears on the Jamaican flag tonight, because all we've ever known are Songs of Freedom, Bob Marley, weird deep cuts. So that's what you're getting tonight. I want to, you know, so many of the things we talked about last issue, we're going to talk about again tonight, but we're going to talk about them in the final resolution of what happens in a really good way. So I want to start with, there was a comic that came out in 1996 called Final Night. Final Night was a great, it introduced a Pharaoh Lad back into the DC universe after being God knows how long. And do you remember when Final Night came out? It was 95, 96. I don't know if you were still at Diamond then.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that a minute. May well have been.
Because it was a big deal.
Yes,
when it came out. But the Sun Eater was going to eat the sun, essentially, is what it came down to. And it was the end. It was all over. Like, they couldn't figure out how to stop it. They kept working through things. There was a plan. Somebody set up a weird plan to Luther. Yeah, it was Luther.
Okay, I was gonna say it's probably that know-it-all brainiac.
Luther sets up a plan that that was going to basically reignite the sun, because the sun was out. That was the whole thing. The sun was out, and you couldn't. Everybody was like trying to figure out, and the whole thing was like, what are these people doing? Like, once the realization hits that, you know, triage isn't working, nothing's working, and everybody's just going to die, is basically what it comes down to, no matter how powerful or how you're going to die. So, like, the Ray goes to Mexico and starts, like, helping them try to, like prepare for what happens when there's no sun. So you got all these characters that, like, can kind of be the sun, you know, to a very small amount of people. So, like,
yeah.
And then you got guys like Hitman, who I really wish that they would with Hitman than they've done. Hitman just holes up in Noonan's, which is the bar that Hitman would hole up in, and like tell story drink, and you know you get these kind of vignettes of what's going. Well, Green Lantern at this point, this was when he had the Parallax in him. This is when he was Parallax. Somehow manages to realize how even in his Parallaxed state. Realizes how bad things are, and Hal Jordan flies off into the sun, reignites it using all of his Parallax powers, and doesn't have any of the side effects that Luther's would have had, like massive tsunamis and earthquakes and the earth tilting on Exaxis and possibly killing everybody anyway. So this is the Parallax redemption. Basically, like, screw you guys, I'm gonna go reset the sun. I'm gonna go turn it off and back on again, and make sure that that everybody can live. And this is flying in the face of all of the horrible things that Parallax had done up to this point for like 2 years. He was the big bad for like 2 years. And keep in mind, Superman can't do anything because the sun's out.
Yeah.
So your biggest of big bad.
He can't even fight Muhammad Ali at that point.
Well, he could fight him.
Yeah.
He would just get his ass beat.
It would be like that thing with Will Smith and fighting Mike Tyson.
So many. It's like, we're into the bone of deep cuts at yeah. this point. Like our deep cuts go so deep now that we're scraping your bones with these deep cuts. but so this is where so Hal flies off into the sun and isn't seen again for like 3 years in comics. He's done. They leave it with Kyle and John why am I blanking on the warrior's name? Guy Gardner.
Oh yeah. Oh, so, that's right. This is the warrior period.
Yeah. We need to do a whole show on the. That was a horrible, horrible thing. But yes, so he sacrifices himself only to return later as the Spectre, because the Spectre needed a body to attach itself to as Hal, which made for some really interesting storylines. And isn't that where Hal the Spectre in Kingdom Come?
Yes. No. Well,
Because Alan Scott's the Green Lantern in Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that thinks that Hal is, if I remember right, I need to look at my statue to see, but I think it was Hal that was the Spectre and Alan Scott was...
May well have been.
Because I think that was that time period.
Yeah, it's hard to say because I keep channeling all these different appearances of the Spectre.
And it's been so many. But yeah, so that's the first redemption I wanted to talk about was Final Night. And if you haven't read it, there's some really interesting kind of ABC storylines that go on during it too, like providing supplies to hospitals and how these superheroes are handling a world without a sun that no matter how strong or how powerful or how great they are, they know that it's never going to they're never going to be enough, and the only person that can actually help them is Parallax, the guy who has like 10 Green Lantern rings and punches Batman out on the reg. So but he ends up flying into the sun and doesn't come back as Hal Jordan, until 99, and then doesn't come back as Green Lantern until the next thing we're going to talk about with Green Lantern. Did you ever...
No, but I think you're right about the timing, in so much as that having fallen, you know, I seem to think Rebirth was right in that corridor where we were working for Diamond, and that becoming a, like, you know, the one of those peaks for Green Lantern readership, buyership.
Right. Yes, but the interest in Green Lantern had peaked at that point. But in the coming years, it had flagged. You know, I don't want to talk too much about the industry or the business, but they needed Hal back. And Geoff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver, this is where Jeff really gets his start on Green Lantern. So this Geoff Johns run that lasts pretty much all of the New 52 starts here, starts with Rebirth. So, you know, one thing I will say about Geoff Johns, I have my problems. I was actually having a long conversation in the car about my problems with Geoff Johns and his run of Green Lantern. But I will say this, and we touched on it, I think, in issue 3, he has a real passion for the history. So, you know, he borrows very heavily from Alan Moore, which we'll talk about a little later, as promised. But also, he wanted Hal back. He wanted to write the ship, you know, of the Green Lantern and the Green Lantern. And he saw this as his chance to do that. And in 2000, he made it so. Oddly enough, making the announcement in the April issue of Wizard magazine. Wizard did some things. We can't drag Wizard completely. They did have some good interviews and things like that. But all in all, it was horrible. So this is the events that follow Emerald Twilight and follow Parallax, and follow him being the Spectre after Final Night. Basically, Johns and Gibbons, well, no, Johns and Scriver bring him back. Johns and Gibbons bring back the Green Lantern Corps.
Yes.
So Dave is still in the mix. Alan Moore won't touch him with a 10-foot pole, as we all know. But Gibbons in the mix. So basically what happens is it's basically the Hal Jordan. Jordan comes back after being separated from Parallax, after being separated from the Spectre, and then the Spectre spinning out into just being a homeless, a vagrant spirit of vengeance, where he doesn't have a body attached to him, so he just goes buck wild, does whatever he wants. As portrayed brilliantly in there was a miniseries, and I think it tied into Infinite Crisis called Days of... And that was because it's just like the Justice League Dark, you know, going after the Spectre. But the Spectre's not reined in by anything. He's just, like I said, he's just like... He's like a bear on PCP, just ripping car doors off at a campground. But yeah, the Parallax gets separated from Hal, and Hal comes back and basically is... I don't want to say he's mind wiped. He's not, but this is definitely a relaunching period where they didn't. He's no longer a test pilot. He's an Air Force pilot, you know. And a lot of this came from the popularity. Keep in mind also the popularity of DC Frontier played really heavily.
Yeah, and that's another of the bright points for the Green Lantern, because you get kind of a retelling.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. That. The popularity of Green Lantern in New, he was one of the most popular characters, and I think a lot of people had the magic that makes Hal Jordan, the cocky arrogance that you know, underpinned by this like sense of morality that really made him a great character to begin with. And I think once they saw that again, there was kind of this, like you said, there was peak Hal Jordan. At that point, everybody wanted a Hal Jordan back and didn't want him to be a bad guy and didn't want a Spectre. They wanted their Green Lantern. And I felt
they kind of took Hal for some different iterations and kind of came back to himself in the end.
Well, keep in mind, this was the 90s. Do we need to remind you of what the comic industry went through in the mid to late 90s? Just the insanity that ensued in the comic industry. Just, you know, spaghetti on the wall to see if it was done. None of it was done. And it just all fell off and, you know, your dog ate it.
Licked it right off the wall. In some cases.
Licked right off the wall. you know, and nobody, he had to spend the one of the Hulk book, which I've got right of me, is that he had to spend the majority of those early days actually convincing people that he wasn't necessarily responsible for what had happened, that it was Parallax. And of course, Batman doesn't believe him. And I think that's more the fact that Batman, you know, that he punched Batman in the face a bunch of times than the other way around. but he goes on to, and this begins what is one of the greatest Green Lantern runs, second, I would say second only to the Alan Green Lantern, second only. It was a brilliant run that ran for, God, I don't know, 10 years, and introduced so many things, whether, like I said, whether you like it or not, entered so many concepts from, you know, the spectrum of emotions to, you know, bringing Krona back and Necron back and having the Blackest Night and having the Sinestro with his core run by the Gordian, the Weaponers, because apparently, again, that's a union job on core. You can be a Weaponer, you know, make good money. You got to get out of apprenticeship. What do they call it? They got to have the apprenticeship, and then you got to be a journeyman Weaponeer. And then if you can make it, though, you can make real good money being a Weaponeer, especially if you can get yourself a whale like old Sinestro. But yes, that's how he came back, and he came back in a really big way. And like I said, then directly following that is the story of Kyle and Guy and Kilowog and Hal relaunching the Guardians and figuring out how to get, because keep in mind, Hal had killed like all the Guardians.
Yeah.
So figuring out how to repopulate the Green Lantern. And then it just went buck wild from there, and lasted really long time. Selling a lot of comics. I'm not going to get into the number, but selling a whole lot of comics. So that's where we are with Hal. Do you have anything to talk about that's not Hal?
Well, I think there's, you know, of course, you know, one of my personal favorite Green Lanterns is a member of the Corps, because he's not from around these parts. and that is, of course, Tomar Rhee,
yes.
A.K.A. Chickenhead.
The members of the Corps are so great, and I loved it when you get, not necessarily, they very rarely had a standalone story involved with those characters, but as an ensemble cast, you got really great.
Yeah.
So you like you some Tomar Rhee, huh?
I do. And another thing I think that's kind of neat about the Green Lantern during certain periods, there were so damn many of them on Earth.
Yeah.
That you got to kind of parse them out. So you had like Guy Gardner being, you know, it's like every group got its own Green Lantern. There was a surfeit of them.
Right. So I do want to talk about our promised, like I said, the for me, the defining Green Lantern stories, and maybe this is age speaking,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure that somebody 10 years younger than me or 15 years younger than me would probably say that the Geoff Johns run was their defining Green Lantern. For me, it's some of the Silver Age stuff and the Alan Moore Green Lantern stuff was great. It was pre-Watchmen, you know, he was figuring it out. But nobody tells a story like he does. And I know we've kind of related some of these stories before, but I do want to go over you because they're perfect. And in terms of what this show is supposed to be about, they are perfect. So a couple of my favorites, and we touched on this, I think, a couple issues ago, but we didn't go in depth, is it comes from Green Lantern 188. And this is like Alan Moore's first book on the Green Lantern. So this is his first take. This is his first shot across the bow as an official, like, Green Lantern writer with a book in a monthly. And he tells this, and right out of the gate lifts and he goes with Mogo, don't, only Alan Moore pull that off.
Exactly.
Only Alan Moore pull that off. And
well,
it's a
not only could Alan Moore come up with, you know, conceptually, that's the sort of thing that was bound to happen. As we discussed in the Green Lantern Corps episode, you never know what kind of shapes and forms a Green Lantern may take. Then you have, you know, the idea of the planet would be bound to happen, but only Moore could give it to you in such a way that explained the character.
So good.
In
so,
a singular adventure that didn't require the character to be anything but the character.
And it had that classic Moore, I think, like Dickensy, if Dickens and M. Night Shyamalan had a baby. Because the story goes like this. You had mentioned Tomari, and this is a very Tomari-centric story, where some of the new were asking why all the Lanterns didn't attend the meetings, you know, because it was an all-hands meeting. You know, this was Michael Keaton in whatever that movie he was in where he played the detective. I think it was The Other Guys, but also was the manager of the Bath & Body Works or Bed Bath & Beyond. You know, this is an all-hands meeting. This is Black Friday, all-hands-on-deck meeting, and one of them was asking Tomari why, you know, why doesn't everybody hear? And he goes on to explain the story of Mogo, the most powerful Green Lantern. And the story goes, and I'm gonna truncate the story. There was a warlord slash, I guess, kind of bounty hunter slash kind of Lobo type character named Bolfunga. And Bolfunga got word that there was this super powerful Green Lantern, and he wanted to challenge him to a fight and prove his worthiness. So he goes to where this guy is on Mogo and lands on Mogo and stays there and camps there and takes off screaming and running and flew
well,
off.
Well, he's running around trying to find Mogo because he wants to challenge.
Well, like one of those ghost shows trying to antagonize him out.
Yeah, trying to call out Mogo. Like, come on. I'm like, you know, it's like Gunsmoke or something.
Right, like, I'm right here, come on, fight me. He takes off because some weird stuff happens in the night that he can't figure out what it is, and he takes off, gets in a spaceship and flies off, and it's only after he flies off and kind of looks in the rear view that he sees the entire planet is a Green Lantern. It's shape, and it's in the way it's laid out continentally, is a giant Green Lantern symbol sitting on this planet. And that's why Mogo don't socialize, because Mogo's a planet. But you don't find out it's a planet until 24 pages in the book.
Exactly. The entire story has been told before you realize why Mogo is the biggest, baddest Green Lantern. And you also get this wonderful impression that our villain in this case is coming to the inescapable realization he's made a big mistake.
Right. Like,
this is not the Green Lantern you want to call out. It's not the one you think you're going to prove yourself with.
Right. Whatever you've heard doesn't do justice what Mogo actually is. Because, I mean, think about it. You're in a bar. You're like, yeah, you know, there's this one Green Lantern that nobody's ever seen. What? Like, yeah, like, he's supposed
to be
super
reputation, so yeah.
Tough. Well, I'm going to go get him. I'm the strongest there is. Show up on this planet. Come out. Mogo, face me. Next panel, just screaming and running for a ship. Like, what was that? Looks in the rear view and it's the whole planet. It's great. It's really, really good. That's exciting. Like, I remember reading that for the first time and thinking, that's a story.
Yes.
Like, that's a Green Lantern story right there.
Well, and if you, and as amazing as that what that is, and it is nothing short of some of the most amazing storytelling, especially in the context of a Green Lantern tale, I don't think anything can quite touch the story of, was it Motlop Rab? Or
Rotlop Fan, I believe.
Yeah, Rotlop Fan, that's it.
So good. It's such a great story. Do you want to relay the plot, please?
It's effectively again is Arissa, I think, is sent, and with what is Alan Moore and Chili Billy Willingham. So it's just layers of greatness.
Yes, yeah. Like, you go from Gibbons to Chili Billy Willingham. Like, they're throwing all of that new talent at this.
Absolutely, and so you have this tale where she has been tasked with doing what apparently Hal Jordan's ring had to kind of do on its own. And that is, she has to go out and assign a Green Lantern to a sector that has none.
Right.
And the problem is that this sector is devoid of any form of light. It is pure dark blackness. It's just in every direction. There simply is no light, but there is life in this sector, and presumably the Green Lanterns have detected that where there is life, there is tremendous capacity for good and evil.
Right.
And evil must be challenged at all costs. And they, she's sent to go and, you know, establish this new Green Lantern for this sector that has none.
Right.
And she's being, you know, she's coming back to report in and having to report that basically there is no there's no Green Lantern in that sector, even after she's gone to assign one to help, you know, usher one into existence. And, you know, she's getting some pushback about this, and she has to explain that this, and what's neat about this is it becomes a really cool sort of proving ground story for her as a character, because here she is challenged to go out and, you know, recruit a new Lantern and having to come back and say that she's effectively failed to do that.
Right.
At least that's the perception, until she is able to explain why this is the case. And because in this lightless world, they have no perception of light and therefore no perception of color. So both the concept of a lantern and the concept of the color green are literally alien to these aliens.
Right.
And that results in a situation where she has to come up with some means by which to take the power of the Green Lantern and impart it to a worthy champion who cannot see nor perceive or even conceive of any of the things that are the, for lack of a better word, core.
Right, the cornerstones of the Green Lantern.
Yeah. And then she brilliantly begins to ply him for information about his life and culture, and discovers that, you know, she starts to think about what other approaches can we take? And she asks, you know, of course, obviously these creatures can hear. They may not be able to see anything because they're all blind, because they don't need to see, but they can hear. So she asks, do they have bells? And he's like, oh, of course, because the concept of a lantern, a vehicle for light,
right,
is inconceivable. But the concept of something that carries sound or projects sound in the way that a lantern projects light is not alien.
I'm looking at it right now. Like, literally, it's in my hand. And I forgot one key tidbit that Moore does here that is just the most Moore thing in the world, that's one of the coolest things, and that just tells you so much about, you know, how deep he thinks. Any other comic writer would write, you know, it so for instance, here's a panel where I think it's Kamatui is creating a dragon, right, with her ring, and she's
that's right, it wasn't Arisa, it was Kamatui, that's right.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that.
It's saying, hey, you know, this is the power ring. Like, she finds Rotlop Fan, and she says, you know, we need you to become a Green Lantern. You know, we think that you'd be the best at it, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he's like, I don't – like you said, he's like, I don't know, whatever. Like, and she's like, okay, so this is a power ring. And if you concentrate, it emits a – you know, and the coolest thing about this, he's trying to explain it. Anybody else would write it out. Right, it emits a beam of green energy that can translate your thoughts into, you know, whatever. Like, it, instead, Alan Moore says it's a power ring. It emits a, and then in parentheses he has untranslatable of untranslatable that.
Very nice. Yeah, because the ring is trying to translate to this creature, and there are no words. I'd forgotten about that. That was another layer of the brilliance of this story.
Because of how frustrating, and it shows her frustration, because she can't say, like, the untranslatable corpse. And he's like, what? And she just, you can see each panel she's getting more frustrated by the fact that she cannot communicate, because it's like intranslatable. You know, she's doing the oath, and brightest day and darkest night don't translate. No evil shall escape my doesn't translate, because they're all blind.
Exactly.
It's just so
and cool. Have never known. There's no frame of reference if you've never known sight or light or any of these concepts. You have to be able to
right
to be there and you know to actually have the capacity, the physical capacity for this.
Yeah. So go on. I just wanted to mention.
Oh
that,
no, I'm yes, glad you brought that up because that was a clever thing. I'd forgotten about the inability to translate these concepts.
Right. So yeah, that's where we get to the bell, because she finally is like, he says something and it triggers in her head that like, oh, sound, of course, like you were saying, and that's where the bell comes from.
Exactly. And so then she conceives the idea of, instead of the Green Lantern being a color and a vehicle for the sort of light spectrum, she conceives the idea of the F-sharp bell, that to define a specific tone in the way green defines a specific color, or at least a broad range thereof, and then takes this a step further. So that, you know, you have this idea, the concept is born, and then the F-sharp bell, unique in the Green Lantern core, needs an oath.
Yes, yes.
That depicts or that conveys this, the same idea, only as a warrior of sound rather than light.
It's and a really cool concept.
Alan Moore, who hands down I consider the best writer of the Demon Etrigan, shows that same way he's, you know, capable of building conceptual, you know, high concept through rhymes. And if you have that handy, could you recite?
Oh. In loudest dinned or hush profound, my ears catch evil's slightest sound. Let those who toll out evil's knell beware my power, the F-sharp bell. I love the fact that...
It's
so good. It's so good. And I love the fact that the next panel, the guard... Because this is a whole... Like you said, this is a retelling to the Guardians of how she handled this situation. So it's like a debriefing. And she's talking to the Guardians, and the Guardians say, I didn't hear you mention the weakness to yellow objects, but then again, I mean, does it really matter since they have no concept of
color?
Yeah,
there is no yellow, and the chances of them encountering anything.
That was pretty great, yes.
Be none the wiser if they did.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a great story.
Again, Alan Moore just... Get the DC stories of Alan Moore because you'll be greatly entertained by all of them.
Yeah, and I did want to talk about that last Alan Moore, the last one in this collected. And you can find what many consider the best, the greatest Green Lantern story in the book, in Green Lantern, in the Green Lantern, the Tales of the Green Lantern in this Stories of Alan Moore collected edition, which we have raved about Lord knows how many times. You know, everything from The Man Who Has Everything, Superman, The Man Who Has Everything, down to, whatever happened to The Man of Tomorrow, sorry. I missaid it. Some really interesting books like Mortal Clay, which was a really interesting Batman, The Killing Joke, which is another, of course, really interesting Batman story. For The Man Who Has Everything was in there. That was him and Gibbons. So that was in there as well. But I did want to talk about the last one, and the last one was a story of Abin Sur in the same vein as that. And it's just so good. Like he just really wails on these stories in a way that you can't under. It's hard to encapsulate how good these are, and I want to be able to do it, but it's just really, really difficult because it is that damn good. But he did do one other story in this book, and that was it? Damn it! Now I'm blanking on what it was. It was like, oh, it was Tigers. That's what it was. It was Tigers.
Oh yes, okay.
Tigers was another one of his stories, and it's another classic kind of Alan Moore story of, you know, fish out of water, stranger in a strange land. And what was really interesting about it is, up to this point, we kind of have this idea that we don't know what exactly happened. We know that Aven Sur crash landed on Earth and gave the ring to Hal. But what we don't know is any of the real backstory to Aven Sur.
That's true. Yeah, you just you've kind of he arrives pretty much tail end of his story.
Yes. Yeah. And all of and the whole story is basically a test for Aven Sur. And it's all about him being tested across the board, and you get to see him kind of being pushed to his limits on this like dead planet. But you get an idea of who he is and why he was considered the great. I'm not going to spoil it because it's actually really good. But you get a great idea of why he is considered to be, you know, one of the greatest Green Lanterns, but nobody's ever told a story about him. So what was really nice for somebody that really loves the Green Lantern as much as I do is to get that backstory on Aven Sur, and how and some of why he was the one that chose Hal.
Yeah.
So and it was on Yzmalt, which Yzmalt ends up being the planet that what's his face, the Red Lantern guy that spits blood all over everybody that Atrocitus comes from.
Okay, yeah. Oh, that's right. Okay, I knew that. The name sounded familiar.
I love the fact that Alan Moore puts things like his ships have a Gestalt complex. Like, what? And in the end, you know, and it leads right up to his death, basically. And about how the demons of Yzmalt laughed as he died, basically. It's a dark story. It is, but it's good for the backstory. And it's, you know, he comes out on top, of course, as he always does. And it's pretty indisciplined. So that is my last of that I've chosen, except Anka, you know, anecdotally. Anecdotally remix, because there are others like one of our kind of seminal favorite was his appearances in Justice, which goes a long way. We've talked about Justice quite a bit in our past, but you know, after trapping the Green Lantern in a cave and breaking his will, how he had to rise above that, you know, and everything that happens in it was, you know, because he has visited. The one thing I do really like about his Injustice is he's put inside of a, for exactly what, but they sent him out into space, and they put him inside of, like, a weird, like, pocket dimension type thing, and then, like, threw all of his greatest fears at him at once, so essentially breaking his willpower. and he's visited by the Phantom Stranger. And the Phantom Stranger's like, hey, I brought your lantern. It's so cool. He's like, you know, and then he has this long conversation about how you don't need to go back and fight for vengeance. You know, you're the Green Lantern and yibbity-yobbity. But it's beautifully on, and it's, you know, it's a great story of, again, like, it's a single arc redemption story that's pretty damn good. But I could talk about, like, one-off Green Lantern stories.
Oh, absolutely. Talk a little bit about, because part of this was to explore the arcs from which this issue and the one that preceded it take their name. So after the events of Blackest Night.
Oh, yeah.
Was there a kind of turnaround? did the dawn, Green Dawn, as it were?
Well, you know, in DC and above all things, nature abhors a vacuum, and the nature of comic books abhors a vacuum too. So if we had a Blackest Night, we would have to. It's a good way to close it. Well done. You had to have a Brightest Day. So they introduced a black ring in Blackest Night. So in Brightest Day, they had to juxtapose that with a white ring. So they introduce a white lantern core in Brightest Day, and It was great. Basically, the first White Lantern was Boston, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because the whole
that's
yeah, right. He is resurrection in and of himself. But he's, you know, he's the one that I think probably suffered in Blackest Night.
Yeah.
I know that Batman had to, you know, see dead Martha, and you know, and fight all the dead Robins and whatever else. And it's but Deadman was the first one, and he realizes that he has the power of life. He has the power to resurrect, where the Black Lantern Ring has the power to kill. But it really established the rebirth of the Green Lantern Corps, a time of hope. And one of the rings that happens in this time period is, after all, as a bookend, as a capstone, really dark. We were talking about an Emerald Twilight where Kosin, and the whole point of the Parallax became Parallax, and that Hal Jordan was infested by this fear parasite, was because Coast City was, well, in Brightest Day, Coast City is rebuilt. So as a nice Green Lantern bookend to show hope over fear and life over death, they rebuild it, which I thought was really great. Did you have any experience with Brightest Day outside of...
I just have a passing knowledge, and I know that there was the White Lantern Corps. I know that this was sort of the turning point where things swung back around in the favor of light.
Sure. And a lot of the dead, I mean, all of the core dead members that died during Blackest Night were returned during Brightest Day. And there was some real interesting, Swamp Thing becomes the White Lantern for a while, because he is the green, he is
oh yes, that's right, I'd forgotten it.
Yeah, and it, you know, and they have said that Brightest Day is about second chances, and it absolutely was. And it was a pretty great story. Again, it falls into that time period where I'm kind of like but I still really enjoyed it, you know. Boston Brand was resurrected, Captain Boomerang, Hawk Girl, Hawk Man, all three were resurrected. Reverse Slash, Flash, what?
Now, Reverse Slash was from, was it Reverse, we got the band wrong.
It was Swords and Lilies.
Oh, that's right,
Reverse,
yeah.
Reverse Slash was the guitar player for Swords and Lilies. I think that's the opposite of Guns N' Roses. That's funny. Oh, that made me laugh. But this has led to, you know, the White being a really, really powerful force in the universe. And the White basically... So if you know anything about color theory and spectrums, right? A lot of people think that black is all the colors put together. That's white. Yeah. So the White Lantern, which Kyle Rayner is kind of the reigning White Lantern champion... He can use any power in the lexicon of powers, because he is the White Lantern, which I thought was a pretty cool little get too.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good story, man. That was a good call. Yeah, it's a good bookend. I like that a lot. Yeah. But I think we maybe should start thinking about closing up shop here. I think we've
probably talked ourselves
it's silly.
Yeah, through a whole lot of
History of the Green Lantern and a whole lot of love.
Well, it's been
not.
Very insightful. I think if people are like me and have just a passing knowledge or interest, they've discovered a whole hell of a lot about the Green Lanterns that they might not have known before.
I mean, I thought I knew a lot. I learned my lesson real quick.
I kind of put you in a position to learn even more than you ever knew.
That's absolutely correct. There are key elements and key issues to all of these books. If you're interested, like we said, the stories of Alan Moore is still available out there. You can get, there's a book called Green Lantern No Fear that I would suggest. It's sort of a collected Green Lantern Rebirth by Jeff Johns that starts the party in that respect. Any of the Silver Age Green Lantern stuff's fun. Any of the Golden Age Alan Scott stuff is really weird. Really, the cool thing about Golden Age books is they're always super, like, they aren't what you expect them to be. They're real. So they're out there for you. Just there's no end of what's out there for you to be able to read. You know, hit your local comic shops, support them, buy them up. Yeah, and that's it. Cole, thank you for the story.
Well, ask after what's available also. A lot of times your comic shop may not have every single trade paperback out there, but oftentimes Diamond or DC might have basically some catalog or, you know, publication that illustrates what all's out there, and oftentimes they'll group it by character or character types or groups and such.
Oh, sure. And I forgot to mention the fact that one of my favorite things about Green Lantern is whenever he comes back, he always just kind of wanders the earth like Kane in Kung Fu for a while. Just flies around like the Southwest, just like, hey, I'm Green Lantern, I'm gonna solve some problems. Just like, what? why don't you just get back to work? But yeah, so why don't you plug us up and we'll start working our way out of here.
Absolutely. And here we are.
Here we are.
Next issue is the oft teased number 300.
Real excited.
It's just crazy. So we're going to have that out for you here directly. We just went on some major catching up before the end of the year. I'm very happy that we're going to hit our marks and hit 300 right at the end of 2018, which has been an amazing year for Hey Kids Comics. Amazing year for the Jedi Cole universe, where you can find us at JediCole.com, and you can write to us at whatever the hell that is, JCUmail@yahoo.com, and be sure and check out DallasOnAir.com for all the great programming, most especially the first and third Sundays of every month of me and the amazing Eddie Medina on the Rantcore Pit Live from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central, and on the third Sundays of every month, preceded by Isle of Toys.
So this will probably be the last show of 2018. The first show of 2019 is going to be issue 300. One way or another, it might come a little before, depending on when we can get it done and get it in the tank and get it out to you guys. But we are far from over. 2019 is shaping up to be an amazing year for us.
Oh, gosh, good night. Right after, hot on the heels of our exploration of 300, I can't believe we got there already. We are going to go back. Sheldon, we're going to go back to Christmas. We're going to spin an issue kind of detoxifying after the holidays, and we're going to talk about our favorite Christmas comic covers. Who gives a rat's what happened in the comic? We want to talk about
there's
the
one
covers
that always sticks out. It was a Hulk issue where he fought the Rhino at a
later
mall.
Later.
Come on. I just want to talk about it. Yeah.
We'll talk about it.
But I mean, we've got, what's the clip hold now for how many we got until, how many were scheduled out for?
Oh, I forget. There's at least another 100 issues already slated, maybe 120. And that's just so far. We keep getting added, and that's not including a 5-issue arc that Andy has proposed that I'm not entirely certain what all it entails.
I've pitched it twice now, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Once, like three years ago.
I don't think you're 100% sure.
Well, I was 3 years ago, and then I thought about it again, and I still want to do it, but now I got to figure out how we're going to, which is easy enough. We'll figure that out. All right, so I hope everybody had a happy Christmas. I know this is supposed to be an evergreen show, but I feel bad not saying it. And I hope everybody has a safe and great new year. Buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody, and thanks for joining us for all these years and all these issues and all the fun.
We wouldn't do it without you guys hanging on and helping us and enjoying what we're doing. So thank you guys so very, very much. And we'll see you in 2019 with issue 300, baby.